written by a mysterious lurker, and me. I've always been talented when it comes to music. I never fully realized that fact until middle school. For a music class, we had to pick an instrument to play. The popular ones went first, but by some luck, I was still able to get a violin. The music teacher also favored the violin and couldn't wait to teach her students on how to play. That was until my skills turned out to be far beyond her own. Within the month, I understood how to read music and could freely play the instrument almost as well as her. I felt proud of myself for a short while. Then I saw the way she looked at me. I now understand her frustration. I was a child and she'd spent her entire life honing her craft. It must have been devastating for her to realize that pure talent sometimes wins over hard work and practice. I hated seeing her like that, so I toned it down. I made mistakes and pretended to need help. It seemed to make her feel a great deal better. Perhaps she assumed my first burst of talent had been a fluke. I rarely fully committed to playing and became withdrawn. The attention and jealousy my talents brought was something I simply could not deal with. My mother saw her kids struggling and hoped to bring back the last time she saw me happy. One day after school, she surprised me by introducing me to a man with a warm smile sitting at our kitchen table. He told me his name, but I'll call him Rose here. I learned he agreed to be my private violin tutor, and Mother cowed me into picking up the loner violin sitting on the table. Rose and I went through scales, trying to gauge what a good starting point might be, but I opened up little by little, and Rose responded in kind. It was like a dam releasing. I could just see the music. I knew what needed to come next. Playing in front of someone else, challenging each other with increasingly complex pieces. I was fully immersed in the music when I stopped abruptly, realizing I'd gone too far. I grimaced, waiting for the walls to crash down again. Instead of jealousy over a younger person being on his same level, he seemed to be relieved. Both of us finally had a person to play with without worrying about negative reactions. After 3 sessions, we stopped paying him as a teacher. I went over to his music studio every Sunday in order to get a break from my regular life. Those days playing felt like the only time I was really alive. I still called him my teacher. People had often teased him for his well-worn violin he refused to replace. It had been in his family for 3 generations. His great-grandmother painted a rose on the side as a gift for her future husband. Imagine my delight when my parents found the money to order my very own violin, complete with a laser-etched rose on the ribs. A somewhat capable luthier himself, my teacher installed the bridge and we played into the night. The past and present spun into a melody of promises for the future. As I got older, I made money in any way I could. I ended up teaching violin myself and did odd music jobs. The way to get ahead in most industries is knowing the right person, or being so talented at your craft, no one can ignore you. Since I became traumatized to reactions to my skills early on in life, I felt content being an unknown musician. As long as I could pay my bills and play with my teacher, I didn't want to be famous. And then one day, my life went off the rails. My teacher went missing. Last thing he mentioned to me was that he accepted a well-paying job. He wanted to update the music studio, and the money would help a great deal. After 3 weeks with no contact, I got worried. I reached out to his family, but they didn't think it was a big deal. I was considering filing a police report when an odd letter arrived in my apartment. The envelope was a deep black, the back sealed with gold wax and a family crest I didn't recognize. I almost ignored it, but then realized this might be from the same person who sent Rose a job request. I opened it. More black paper poured out of the envelope, and resplendent gold lettering requested I perform at a private dinner party. My pulse quickened. This could be from the same people who hired my teacher. The payment amount was insane. If Rose wasn't missing, I would have assumed this to be a joke and tossed away the letter. At the very least, they might have been the last person to have seen him before he went missing. I accepted the request and nervously awaited the day of the performance. The day of, I donned my second best, well, second cleanest, outfit and waited outside my building. I only looked away from the street for a second, but when I turned back, a huge vehicle had materialized. If this thing's father was the fanciest antique car, its mother was a limousine. The cab stretched about 50 feet back, a redundant-looking tire pouched in ornate curves near the passenger door. With a click, the lone door near the rear opened. As I sat down in the back seat, I thought it was neat they retrofitted an old car with automatic doors. The windows were tinted the same opaque sheen on the inside as they were on the outside. My seat wrapped around and extended up to a conversation-stifling solid wall, separating me from the driver. Not that there was time for a chat. The car lurched forward only to stop abruptly, launching me from my seat. I had to pull a little spin maneuver to land on my back to soften the blow from my violin. The door clicked open and I happily crawled out, planning to retreat to my bedroom. I crashed down onto gravel amid warm, sticky air. When I entered the vehicle, I left behind a chilly, overcast morning. I now looked around at a clear sky and a rather humid dusk. I was picking pieces of driveway out of my palms as I circled around in disbelief. I was on top of a hill in front of an entrance to a garish estate in some sort of procession of parked cars and carriages. The wheels hadn't even gone one full rotation. To reinforce the impossibility of it all, minutes ago my phone enjoyed the full bars of a bustling city, and now the only reception to be found was from a dark figure regarding me from the mansion steps. A man in a black business suit looked down his nose at me as I climbed the staircase. "You are this evening's entertainment, I presume," the man droned. "I guess," I panted, hefting the violin case as if to prove I was.
"You might tell me where I am, Jeeves?"
The butler let out an indignant snort.
"Not where you're supposed to be. Please, right this way."
Bereft of options, I plodded along after him. He offered to carry my violin case. I refused, not wanting to part with it. He led us up the marble steps into the grand hall. I felt overwhelmed right away at the sight of the interior. I tried focusing on my guide as not to get lost in the details. He felt off. Something about his wide strides and all too perfect features. Before my mind clued into what bothered me about him, a figure stepped out from behind a golden statue lining the long hallway. I did a double take, not believing what I was seeing. The man was tall and dressed in a light brown duster over a deep red vest. A worn cowboy hat sat on top of his head. His feathered head. I must have stepped into some sort of lavish costume party. His face looked like an oversized eagle, white feathers disappearing under his collar. He started to walk over to us and I froze in fear. The butler noticed and huffed, seeing him stopping a few steps away. His legs weren't normal. He wore pants that stopped at his knees. Furred legs like a cat supported his weight. A set of cowboy boots nearly reached his knees and were cut open and snugly fitting for large claws to freely move. This costume must have cost a fortune to make.
"Mr. Fowler, you should be in the main hall with the rest of the guests," the butler said, not hiding his tone.
"I was just getting some air. No need to fuss.
Say, I'll bring our talent for the night to the party,"
he answered back in a kind voice that held the hint of a southern accent. The butler didn't appear pleased, but he couldn't be rude to a guest. Gave a curt nod and hurried off to his other duties. I stared up at the bird face looking back down on me. The mask looked impossibly realistic.
I like your costume,"
I said in a small voice, unsure of what else to say. A small laugh came from him and I hurried to catch up as he started to walk. The lush details of the mansion distracted me for a few seconds. We arrived at a large golden set of doors with countless delicate flowers set into the precious metal. Without any effort, Fowler pushed them open, revealing a massive ballroom on the other side. Sound of a party came exploding out. Grandiose tables lined with guests entered the room, people laughing and talking. So many sounds of glasses and cutlery on plates, and all those sounds faded as I stared at the guests inside. Each and every one of them had features my mind worked to explain away as elaborate get-ups. I was borderline kidnapped to play at some avant-garde costume party. I thought I heard a sound struggle through the din, something that reflexively put me at ease, yet in this setting, felt wrong. Fowler led me around the edge of the ballroom. Guests paid me no mind, but would occasionally extend Fowler a greeting or nod as we passed.
My attention was drawn to the cacophony of instruments that adorned the walls. Multitudes of every instrument imaginable nestled in their own cubbies, honeycombed to contain as many as possible in the generous space. Some were inlaid in the floor with clear glass coverings, allowing guests to admire them from above. The ceiling went up so high I couldn't see its end, but it too had even more instruments seemingly floating in place. The notes of instruments tapered off to draw attention to a small stage facing some particularly elegant tables. Intermittently, an instrument would glow softly and animate, playing itself. Sometimes several would alight at once to harmonize or take the melody in a different direction. Surely the owner of this collection had a penchant for animatronics or perhaps holograms. I heard that familiar sound again, and in context, I recognized it as a song I heard many times before, an original composition from my teacher. With excitement, I honed in on it, drawing into some displays near the stage. In what could be considered a string section, I heard the last faltering notes as a violin faded. My heart caught in my throat when I saw the unmistakable painted rose. Fowler spoke and derailed my racing thoughts.
Everyone says the same thing when they arrive here.
Nice costumes.
They look almost real.
Now, why do you think that is? The tall man said and leaned in over my shoulder. Sweat started on the back of my neck and I spun. Those yellow eyes didn't appear to be a costume. No makeup, colored contacts, or mask in the world could make someone look this much like an eagle. I wanted to turn heel and run for the door, and yet too scared of what would happen if I did so.
They all want to believe these are costumes, because they can't admit what's staring them right in the face. By admitting we aren't dressed up in props and masks, you're forced to accept the truth.
I wasn't able to respond to him. A tall creature came up to us, a wide smile on his face filled with countless sharp teeth. Judging by how Fowler moved aside, this other creature was the main host. He wore a pinstripe suit that reminded me of an actor in an old gangster movie. A black fedora sat in his head to complete the look, his hair black and wild coming up from his hat. The strands twisted into each other in a way that reminded me of spider legs. I noticed those details only after I could pull my eyes away from his face. He only had two features, his wide smile and a gaping black spiral indented into his skull that constantly moved. I hugged my violin case tighter to my chest, praying that my teacher hadn't come here and gone through the horror of meeting these monsters.
It seems as if our entertainment has arrived.
The host spoke in a crackling voice that sounded as if he was speaking through an old radio. He clasped his hands on my shoulder and held me in a firm grip.
Name's Sharp, don't wear it out.
He wrung the fabric of my shirt between his fingers.
But by the looks of you, you don't know how to wear much.
Wiping his hands on a nearby tablecloth, he continued.
I'll be your benefactor this evening. I know you'll put on a performance of a lifetime. We've been watching you for some time. I got a hot lead, you would have been the next big thing. I just need to hear it for myself. You're going on right before dinner. Like a appetizer or something.
His writhing tendrils occasionally brushing against my face. Noticing Fowler, he all but tossed me aside.
What are you up to, bird brain?
Just admiring your paltry collection of trinkets, Fowler said.
I'd rather be paltry than poultry, so if you'd kindly take your seat and get your stink off the merchandise.
A seat at your own table? How you honor me, sir.
Fowler said, deliberately loud enough for nearby guests to hear. A few aristocratic-looking types gave sidelong glances at Sharp. Sharp seemed taken aback, but quickly composed himself.
Of course. Of course. The generosity of my house knows no bounds.
Sharp said with equal bluster. His spiral rattled with something of a growl as he turned to mingle amongst the monstrosities. Fowler looked pleased with himself.
Looks like we'll be dining together.
Here, take a seat next to me, Fowler said as he led me to the table in front of the stage. It wasn't lost to me that Sharp said I would have been the next big thing. I wondered if Fowler had strategically kept himself between us.
I trust your set is prepared for this evening?
Sharp asked.
We were worried these performances would not continue. After your family was killed by a group of hunters, no one expected you to step up to the plate. Dear Sharp,
Fowler butted in, his beak slightly open as if he also was smiling. Sharp let his smile falter. If he had eyes, he would have been glaring daggers at the other monster. Small, hushed giggles came from around the table. Sharp may be fearsome, and I assumed very powerful, but he didn't have the full respect of everyone in the room. As much as he wanted to pretend otherwise, I could tell the comment bothered him.
Yes, it was a tragic event, but there shall be no delays as long as my family blood still stands.
Sharp replied, brushing off the looks he was getting.
Some have wondered how those humans even managed to kill so many powerful creatures. It was almost as if they had some sort of inside information,
Fowler suggested. Despite having the head of a bird, it was clear to see his enjoyment over pestering his host. His eyes gleamed with a dangerous light, almost daring Sharp to fight him.
Are you implying something?
Sharp hissed, but collected himself.
Regardless, that's not what this night is for. It's high time this human performed for us.
Now, what if I refuse?
I spoke in a small voice. Sharp's spiral stopped for a second and I felt all the air leave my lungs. I forced my body not to shake as he turned his head in my direction. In a swift motion, he reached over Fowler and grabbed my wrist, the fingers tightening in a strong grip as a warning. He got in close and I could smell his breath. A hint of copper smell hit my face.
We have different uses for you other than your music skills,
he threatened. I glanced over to spot the wine glass one guest held. The liquid was far too dark to be red wine. I swallowed hard, considering my options. Fowler gave an awkward cough, and Sharp realized the unbecoming position he was in. Guest started to snicker, and Sharp released my hand, retreating from the table. I felt like a hen in a fox house. I was alive simply because no one had gotten around to killing me yet. I needed to take a drink to settle my nerves. I gave a swirl to whatever red liquid was in my glass to check its viscosity. Basically sure it wasn't blood, I took an apprehensive sip.
This is the best wine I've ever tasted, I blurted out.
One of those bemused bird smiles flashed across Fowler's face.
I believe it, he said. I suppose you only sampled swill at best.
I raised an eyebrow at him.
It's the grapes, you see. Grown with the purest water and the most fertile earth on the planet. Cultivated by artists that have done nothing else for generations. Of course, they never see the fruits of their labor.
Well, that's not fair. Where does all the wine go?
Why, we take it all, of course. Much too good for humans.
Fowler said, knocking back the contents of his cup in one gulp.
So monsters don't create anything. You just take what you want,
I asked.
That is the prerogative of the predator, don't you think? I mean, sometimes if one indulges in such eccentricities, a monster can certainly have a hobby. Largely, though, the best of the best is simply taken from humans. Your science, your art. Most everything left in your world is whatever dredges we didn't care for.
He leaned back and surveyed the endless orchestra above us.
Most everything.
Sharp's voice rang from the stage, carrying unnaturally throughout the room.
My esteemed guests, friends, accomplices.
Sharp pointed to a particular group which flared up with laughter.
It's wonderful to host all of you for another of my get-togethers. And of course, a new installation.
Sharp gestured widely at the instruments.
It is my great pleasure to bring you the finest musical stylings in this or any realm. You deserve only the best, pieces as immortal and powerful as you are.
The fervor in his voice caused a chill to run through me. This is the first time he'd seen genuine all evening. His spiral coiled into a crescendo of its own as he raised his arms skyward.
May their songs echo forever in these halls and
in your minds,
Fowler said at the same time as Sharp, mocking him. Applause nearly drowned out Fowler muttering,
Oh my, he sure does like that line.
If you'd please.
Beckoning me to the stage, a stark departure from how rudely he'd been treating me in private.
Break a leg. Or something,
Fowler said with a small wink and let me walk away and onto the stage. The lights dimmed and a spotlight fell on me. The instruments fell silent as if they too were listening. like 100 predators stalking me from the tree line, the reflective eyes of most of the audience were trained on me. Sharp returned to his seat and did not look overly impressed. I got the impression he loved music the same way safari hunters love animals. There was something more to all this. My mind was spinning trying to make sense of it all. I closed my eyes, the feeling of my familiar violin in my hands relaxing me. My bow hesitated over the strings. A great wail pierced the darkness, resolving into a song. The alcove with the rose violin blared with light, all heads turning to it. If a violin could give melody to a scream, that was the song it played. A shrill yet beautiful warning. Soul to soul, I knew who it was. The light flickered before being snuffed out, a few strangled notes and then silence once more. I raised my violin over my head, tears flooding my eyes over what I needed to do. All the monsters let their mouths drop open as I slammed my poor dear partner against the wooden stage, shattering it beyond repair. The silence that came afterwards was deafening. Sharp froze in disbelief, and I only had a few seconds to act. I may have ruined the violin they wanted to preserve, but they could have forced me to play again. I chose to live. Before any of them could stop me, I placed a finger to my mouth and bit down hard. It wasn't as easy as I expected, but by the time Sharp got close, I did enough damage to my hands that I doubted I would ever be able to play at the same level again.
"Insolent, repugnant human!"
he shouted, his voice more static than words. His spiral grew larger. His hands turned into sharp claws as he stormed the stage. I truly thought he was going to kill me. A sound from the crowd stopped him. A single person clapping and laughing at the scene. Sharp froze again, his spiral a maelstrom over his guests.
What a show! Humans are such interesting creatures. That one seems a tad defective, though.
I won't be disrespected like this!
Oh, well, how would you prefer to be disrespected?
Fowler said as he sauntered up to the stage. Sharp flared up, focusing on Fowler, then turning back to me. The audience practically vibrated with excitement. Fowler acted like he'd just clued in that Sharp was being serious.
You wouldn't sully your collection and this stage on our account.
Fowler spoke smoothly, as if he was trying to soothe a rabid dog.
To kill the human here and now, well, you'd have a collection of the final performances of the finest musicians to ever live, plus one strange percussionist with a gnarled hand.
The tornado that was Sharp slowed contemplatively.
That would be almost embarrassing, don't you think?
Quiet gasps spread through the crowd as the atmosphere shifted from instinctual bloodlust to sophisticated posturing. Guests began to whisper amongst themselves.
Oh yes, quite right.
How go?
Embarrassing indeed.
Sharp's attention turned to the audience, and his anger transformed into panic.
No, I would never. I was merely...
Sharp's spiral folded in on itself, writhing nervously. He began to placate the crowd with promises of new performances shortly before turning back to me.
Get out of my sight.
Sharp seethed, just loud enough for me to hear. I was all too eager to get off the stage, and Fowler guided me towards the door. I nearly broke down by the time we left the ballroom. My hand was bleeding, and I wanted to cry. The monster at my side noticed my emotional state and gave my shoulder a small pat. Thank you. You suggested I break something. If you hadn't, I might not be here, I said to the creature. He really did save my life without calling attention to it. I never expected someone like him to be so kind. It seems like I misread him. He stopped walking, and I got worried that we had been followed. I looked around to see no one but us near the front door.
Sharp does feed us well. If you refused to play, we would be able to take the pieces we wanted from your body. Ever since I heard that tale of the human getting his liver eaten over and over again, I desperately wanted to try human liver.
As he spoke, his sharp beak got ever closer to my face. His accent lost any charm it may have had as his voice got raspy. I clutched my injured hand, just waiting for him to take a bite.
I could eat you right now, you know. Nothing really to stop me.
but there is one thing I like more than a tasty human meal, he said.
The fear of this monster almost overtook me. My body refused to move, and I was fighting off the urge to faint. And what's that? I asked in a terrified tone.
To piss off, Shop.
Valor said and finally pulled back. All menace from his appearance faded. He seemed pretty proud of his answer. I let myself sigh as he kept explaining himself.
Shop is strong, but lacks the respect he needs to follow in his family's footsteps. He is very angry you're alive, and that serves my purposes.
That was some sort of relief. My guide was nice enough to get me to the front door. He looked at my hand and warned me that with modern surgeries, it may be possible for me to recover enough to play at the same level as before. If I went down that route, we would end up meeting each other again. I got home safe enough and got my hand treated. I can still play, but not as well as I would like. I took over my old teacher's studio so I could at least make a living off music in some way. I do get nervous anytime I come across a student who's a bit too good, that perhaps their talent may someday put their life at risk. But I know I can't warn them. I've heard doctors say it's not too late to fix my hand. Some nights I stay up thinking about it. Most nights, though, I think about that rose violin, try to convince myself what I heard was some sort of echo. Avoid facing the possibility that my teacher is still trapped there somehow, with countless others. But I know what I heard, and I know what I felt.
Thank you for listening. You can handle another horror story, right?